Welcome to the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa's here screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join us at any time during the broadcast, press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will screen your call. We're kicking off a new series on the Audio Road today, and joining me to kick it off is George Gallimore. We're going to be talking about communication skills. George, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, great to have you here. We've let everybody know that you've been with us at the CMC for how long now?
Oh, the last year was my fourth year.
Fourth year. So you teach, you know, we call it our day of negotiation skills, but we've really learned that it's a lot more about communication and building relationships, and you teach, you know, so many other skills, and we've had such great feedback that we wanted to make sure we brought you on, and you're our first guest on this new series, so it's great to have you here.
Absolutely. Again, great to be here.
All right, so what are we talking about today?
Well, we're talking about the art of communication. You know, when it comes to business, and you know this, Kevin, when it comes to running an effective business, you've got to be able to communicate with your customers, with your whoever it may be, whether we negotiate or whatever, we'd be able to have just a basic foundation of communication. You know, and the funny thing is that most of us think that we're pretty good communicators. But when we put ourselves up against the test and really try to get our ideas out there, I'm pretty sure it would be pretty safe to say, if I asked everyone out there, have you ever said something or asked someone to do something and they just got it completely wrong? Is it their fault? Is it our fault? Well, it's generally a combination of both. So we're not as good of communicators as we think we are. Would you agree?
I would agree. And you know what's interesting is people, the attitude I get from a lot of people is they feel like you're either naturally a good communicator or you're not. And if you're not, well, tough luck. What they don't realize is communication is no different than anything else, riding a bike, driving a truck, whatever. They're the learned skills, and that's why we want to do this. Anybody can learn to be a good communicator.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, there's an art to communicating, and if you are that born natural communicator, you have that art. But ultimately, there's a skill behind the art. There's a skill that you have to master. There's some basics you have to follow. And if you follow the basics and if you are a student of the skills, anyone, and I mean anyone, can be an effective communicator to be able to get your point across and to understand the other person. So there's no doubt about it. Absolutely, you can start to on the road to becoming that great communicator that you need to be. Are great leaders born or made? You know, there's always that debate when it comes to communication. Great leaders, great communicators can be born, but they can also be made.
Absolutely. You know, and I haven't finished this book. In fact, I just downloaded it the other day and just started on it. But it kind of goes along with this topic of, you know, feeling like you're either a good communicator or you're not. We know that's not true. You can be taught that. I'm reading a book now called The Charisma Myth. And it's the same thing. People, you know, believe you're either born with charisma or you're not, and it turns out that's not true. Charisma is just, a lot of it are communication skills that help you be more charismatic, that it's not magic, and you can develop those same skills. I can't
Absolutely.
Give you a book review yet because I haven't read enough to know if it's any good or it's a good idea.
You know, I think some or oftentimes the heart of charisma is it sits on the outside of your head. It's your two ears. If you can listen and listen well, you can meet the needs of the other party, and then they think you're very charismatic. You're very good, and they just can't explain it, but they just happen to have that feeling about you, and it really is that skill of listening. And I say skill because it's something that you can work on and something you can master.
Now, I'm going to throw in a twist here because I don't remember the number. You may know this, and I've seen lots of different numbers thrown out, but what I'm referring to is the percentage of our communications that are nonverbal. And I know it's big. It's like actually the nonverbal cues are bigger than the verbal. I just don't remember the numbers of the percentage. But the twist is, our audience, a large majority of their communications are on the phone. And you know, that brings up a whole new set of challenges. You don't have those, well, you have some, but you don't have the body language part of the nonverbal. I mean, you can still use tone and pace and other things that aren't completely verbal, but you miss a lot of the body language stuff on the phone.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the statistic you're looking for, it was a study done by a man named Albert Moravian back in the late 50s, early 60s. You know, all the communication studies were done in the late 50s, early 60s, and I was talking to somebody about why that is. Why was it back at that time? And he relayed to me it was because there was a lot of acid in college. I don't know how true that is, but some of these studies, you kind of makes you wonder. But what happens is there's something called believability of our message. And we gauge as human beings almost naturally the believability of a message based upon three simple areas. First, it's your visual, then it's your vocal, and then it's the verbal. So real quick description of what those are. Your visual is what you see, right? It's your body language, how you move, how your facial expression works. The vocal is how you use your voice. It's the highs, the lows, the fast and the really slows. Then the verbal are the words you choose to use, the sentence structure that you have, right? So those three elements make up your believability. And 60%, the numbers are like 57, but I round it to 60%, of the believability of your message is visual, what you see. 30% is how you say it. It's that up, the down, the pitch, the pace, the pause, all those things. And only 10% of the believability of your message is based upon the words you use.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Wow. Yeah, it is. You know, and I knew you would know those statistics, by the way. I sprung that on you, but I knew you'd know. the one that I've, because I've read some of these and I study some of the stuff. The one that I pick up a lot with people now that I'm aware of it is when somebody is saying something affirmative, but all of their gestures are negative. Like,
absolutely.
People say yes, but they're shaking their head no. I catch those kind of clues all the time now, and I'm just amazed at once you start paying attention to them, how obvious they are. And I'm sure even before I understood, before I was looking for them, those gestures still have a huge impact, even if you don't realize they have an impact. When somebody's saying something positive, but all their gestures are negative, it's not as believable.
Absolutely, absolutely. And here's a little trick for you guys out there listening to do. Next time you're at usually like a bar setting, you go to a Chili's or a Friday's, and they've got a bar in the center, and they've got tables on the outside, or even at a real bar, and you're out just having a good time. Watch lady who's sitting there talking to her girlfriend next to her on a bar stool, and she's facing her girlfriend, a friend, and then somebody comes up. Usually it's the guy who got to the bar early, had a few drinks in his hand, and watches all the ladies as they walk in, right, the creepy guy. He comes in and sits on the stool. He looks over at the girl, and he starts talking to her. Now, watch what happens. You can tell very quickly whether she's interested or not. It's called the rule of the belly button. You see, if she leans towards her girlfriend, if she's been facing her girlfriend and the guy comes up to her on her, say, left side, and she turns her head to the left, but her body is still facing right towards her girlfriend, they can carry on a 20-minute conversation, but she's not interested. Now, if she flips her body from right, facing her girlfriend, and flips it to the left and faces the guy who came up to her and has a conversation, she's interested. It's as simple as that. There is It's almost uncanny how often you can see it. You'll be able to tell the moment you watch it, the moment you begin to recognize it. It's the law of the belly button. If you're walking out of a room and somebody says, hey, you got a second, and they just turn their head and say, yeah, what you got, they don't want to talk to you. But if they turn their entire body towards you and their belly button faces you, they're ready, open, and willing to communicate with you.
Wow. Does that mean I should talk to the belly button? Probably not, right?
You know, Lisa probably wouldn't like that if you're looking south on a young lady.
Hey, but one thing real quick, because I know you've got a lot of material. You and I could do this. I didn't do a great intro, meaning that if you could just take 30 seconds or a minute and kind of give the listeners an idea of what kind of questions might be good as you and I go through your Lisa's screening calls and we'll take questions, but why don't you give the listeners kind of an idea of what kind of questions we'll be talking about?
Absolutely. So tonight what we're going to talk about are some basics and some foundations of communication, right? What it is that we do or what we should be doing, and really the big barriers that get in the way. You know, what is it that stops our message from getting to the other person and that other person understanding us? You know, oftentimes we just say when they don't get it, that other person's an idiot. It's not that they're an idiot. We may not have explained it right. We may not have communicated it properly, or vice versa. They might be a little bit of an idiot. So as we go through the foundations and as we talk about some barriers that get in the way, you know, some things that you might want to start thinking about and asking about are maybe some situations that you've had where you thought you expressed them correctly. It just didn't register on the other side. And we can do a little autopsy, if you will. And I always like to look at it as an autopsy without blame. Jim Collins in his book, Good to Great and Built to Last, talks about autopsies without blame. So let's look at a situation, if you have one, quickly go over it, and let's start asking some questions about it. Start digging into those situations and do an autopsy on it to find out really what was the barrier, what did get in the way, what caused the problem. Then, well, you know, what are the different mediums of communications and channels, and what's the best one to use in different circumstances or situations? And so those are the types of questions you can kind of think about. You know, what are some of the challenges I've had? What might it have been? What's the best method to communicate this type of a message? You know, as drivers, sometimes you're forced to express messages on the phone that you probably shouldn't and that should wait to a different time. So, you know, what ways should we express them? What methods should we use? And then what are some of those things that get in our way?
Very good. Hey, another quick experience that I had, and this goes back to I was still driving full time, but I was doing all my hours overnight because I was going to school during the day and studying and doing some other things. And I had about an hour and a half window that I didn't do anything. I just had to hang out and wait for trailers to get ready. And I would hang out some nights in the dispatch room, and the overnight dispatcher there was probably one of the worst communicators I've ever met. And I could go back now and, you know, maybe help him. I don't know. But I would stand in there and I would watch, and drivers would come in, and within seconds, the communication would fall apart completely. And I was just amazed at how bad it was. I mean, when I spent some time with the guy, and I think I had some natural abilities even back then that I was able to communicate fairly well, and I got to know this guy, and he was a nice guy. I mean, he had good intentions, but somehow the minute he would start talking to a driver, things would just fall apart. And they would almost be screaming at each other sometimes. And I would stand there and think, what just happened? I mean, these two, I felt like I needed to be an interpreter because it was almost like these two were speaking two different languages. The driver would say something, the dispatcher would respond, but the response was so off base, then the driver would get upset. And before you know it, it was amazing how fast it could fall apart. And it was consistent. He was like this with almost everybody, and I thought, I know he doesn't want to be that way. That's not his intention. I've talked to him. I know that's not his intention, but at the time, I had no idea how to help him.
You know, and that's fairly common, believe it or not. People in situations or people put in positions where they have to talk to a lot of different people, and they just don't get it. You know, and you know, oftentimes as drivers, it's a nice job. I've met a lot of you guys, and I have a lot of respect for you. And with that respect comes a lot of understanding of where you guys come from. And some of you are just comfortable in a truck driving because you don't have to interact with a lot of people. And it's a little uncomfortable for you. And that communication line can fall apart very, very quickly. And I would say that, you know, businesses are made or unmade, if you will, based upon the level of the communication that we can really garner and utilize with our customers.
Well, and I think that's why it's so important. I think you're right. We're in an industry that, you know, we know communication is key to everything. I mean, business relationships, personal relationships, everything is so important. We're in an industry that has a couple challenges. I mentioned one, the fact that a lot of the communication is by phone only. We don't get to see some of these people face-to-face. But you just mentioned another one, just personalities. People become truck drivers for a reason. And a lot of times that reason is they like to be on their own. They like to be in a truck without being supervised and without answering to people and interact. You know, for my listeners, owner-operators who want to grow their business and be better and more successful, they've got to at least step outside that for a minute and realize how important it is. The other thing, though, is if you can teach them these skills, then it becomes so much more comfortable. I mean, part of the reason they're uncomfortable is they don't have the skills. If you learn the skills, interacting with people becomes fun.
Absolutely. So, you know, speaking of those skills, and that's really what it takes is just that skill to hone it down, to fine-tune it. Just like driving a truck, you've got to start somewhere, and some of us will be, you know, or going back to a bicycle even, some of us will be on training wheels and some of us will be riding already, but we've got to start. And so let's start a little bit about, you know, looking at some of these skills that we need to begin to first foundationally understand and then begin to employ. And we'll go through some of these. And we'll even give you some groundwork, like the homework I kind of gave you earlier. Watch people. Watch their physical reactions and watch how, if that belly button isn't facing somebody, watch how you can tell that they're just not interested. And the flip side of that is if you want somebody to feel that you're interested in them and what they have to say, you've got to make sure your body is square facing them and that belly button is facing in their direction. So it works both ways. You can see it on the outside, but you've got to remember, homework piece number one, especially for all you guys and gals out there who have their spouses at home, next time you talk to your spouse when you get home, turn away from the TV, turn away from whatever you're looking at, and turn your body face-to-face, belly button to belly button, and have a conversation, and I guarantee you it will change dramatically, and they won't exactly know how to explain it, but they'll begin to feel that they can actually talk to you a little bit better.
Interesting.
With that said, let's talk a little bit about some basic things about communicating. You know, back in the college days, they teach you a basic communication model, and it's composed of obviously two people. I like to look at it as football. You know, you got a sender and a receiver. You got a quarterback who throws a pass. You got a receiver who catches a pass. And when we communicate, we've got a sender and a receiver. Now, here's what happens: is that sender sends a message off to the receiver. And then the receiver receives the message. Pretty obvious, but what happens in the middle is something a little bit unique. When the sender of a message sends it off, they do something called encoding. They encode their message. And when you encode your message, everything about you goes into the way you encode your message. It's like wrapping a gift. You know, some of you out there probably wrap a gift. Well, we're talking to truck drivers. You get a bag and you throw it in there and you throw some tissue paper in there, right? Kevin, you probably
That's
do
right.
that. Absolutely. We do it simple. We do it easy. Now, some of you out there who are listening do all the edges just perfectly. You double fold the edges and use double-sided sticky tape. And some of you take it to the mall guy, pay him a buck or two or the gal, and have her do it. Different ways to wrap a gift. There's different ways we wrap our message. And everything that has happened to us that day, our mood, our behaviors, our personality, the mood, everything goes into how we package that message. And so we package up that message, and then we send it off. Once the receiver receives that message, they have to interpret it. And that interpretation is called decoding, right? And that's a lot like unwrapping a gift. Some of you out there unwrap a gift piece by piece. My grandmother, she used to unwrap it slowly, piece by piece, and she actually reused it. If you ever got a gift that had wrapping paper with creases already through it, it was hers. She used it already. And some of you just rip right into it, right? So we've got different ways to unwrap a message. Now, if you think about it, Kevin, what do you think goes into the way somebody unwraps that message?
Probably their style of communication.
Absolutely. Everything that the person used to wrap up that gift, that message, their behavior, their style, their personality, everything that they use is the same thing the other person uses to unwrap it. Simply put, I can communicate to you one day, one way, but if the next moment my wife calls me and we get in an argument over the phone and I call you back, we're going to communicate a different way. Because the way I package that message is based upon my mood. It's based upon what kind of argument I just had. It's the fact that Lisa's been screening your calls poorly and you're getting people who can't carry on a conversation. You're getting frustrated. So all those things get into our heads when we send a message and receive a message. Now, looking at that, can you already tell where a lot of our communication problems happen?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just thinking about it and talking about it, you start to get the feeling of how do we ever communicate and get our message across?
Absolutely. There's a cognizance that we have to have. We have to really be aware of what we're doing at the moment, and we'll get to that in a moment. You see, what happens is once I've sent the message, that's where most people think and believe that communication has happened. I've sent my message. You'll ask somebody, are you a good communicator? Absolutely, Kevin, I'm a good communicator. I can speak my mind, and I speak it well. Well, that's only half of the equation. What do you think the other half is?
The receiving part, or what my part is as the communicator?
Well, it just happened between you and I. You just demonstrated it. I asked you a question, and then you responded. See, if I just send a message to you, communication has not happened. I have to get feedback. I have to get a response. And that feedback can be verbal or nonverbal, but there has to be feedback in order for it to be a true communication. So for those of you out there who are that very direct person who will speak their mind and tell somebody exactly how they feel at the moment to the T and then walk away, you have not communicated. All you have done is spoken your piece and walked away.
Interesting. Okay, so I just had an insight here, and that is the one thing we've tried over the years, and it's kind of what I do every day, but it's a little different. I've done webinars, and I've done a bunch of them, and I just don't like them, and I don't do them much anymore. I get invitations to do them all the time, and the reason that I don't like them is because I have zero feedback. I mean, you know, they want you to do an hour webinar and then take questions for 15 minutes at the end. But for that hour, I'm talking and talking and talking, and I have zero feedback, and it drives me crazy.
You don't have any idea if your message is resonating with your audience.
Yeah, and it's
uncomfortable. That's what happens. And that's what happens with a lot of people when they communicate. They just speak their – my father-in-law is a perfect example of this. I know he's not listening to this, so it's just a perfect example to use. He speaks his mind and says, that's all we're going to do. He talked to my wife. He said, listen, Tressy, he said, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it, and we're going to get it done this time. Be here at my house, 5 o'clock. And then he walked away. There was no communication there. There was no opportunity to ask a question, nothing.
So what was that, Kevin? Interesting.
And so what happens now is when we don't have that feedback, try it for a while. Try to talk to somebody who doesn't give you anything, no facial expression, no body language, nothing. And it's very, very difficult to have that conversation and keep it going.
Yes, it is.
So what we can take out of this, and what I want you guys to start doing is very simply this. When you are on the other side of a conversation, somebody is sending a message to you, I want you to be present in the conversation. What I mean by present, so I want you to be there, eyeball to eyeball, looking at them. If you're face-to-face, again, if you're on the phone, we can get into that later, but if you're face-to-face, make eye contact. Shake your head. Make some noise. Oh, I got you. Then what happened? Ask some questions. Well, what happens next? And that's a little bit, you know, getting into the listening side, but I want you to be able to get feedback to the party sending the message, because there's nothing worse than being on the other end of a conversation with no feedback.
Yeah, and I know we have, you know, you have actually two different sets of skills to learn. One, you know, as you're trying to send the message and communicate, and mm-hmm. but the other one, and I think it's very important, is the ability of being a good listener, being a good receiver. I think that goes a long way towards creating better communications.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's the other part of communication, where we listen to the message and we send back that feedback. And that creates a loop, and that's the communication loop that we need to look for. And in that loop, there's so many other things that happen, though, that get in the way. And as we talk about some of these bumps and that get in the way, or I call them barriers to effective communication, as we talk about some of these, if you guys have a situation you're thinking of that, you know, it just didn't go right, and the more you tried, the harder you tried, it just didn't work, you know, give us a call and we'll talk about it, and we'll kind of dissect it a little bit. But you'll see, Kevin, oftentimes a lot of different barriers get in the way of us really effectively communicating. And one of the biggest ones is right in the middle of this loop, if you will, and it's called noise. There's internal noise and external noise, and I'm sure you've all heard that term before. But really quickly, what that means is, well, let me ask you this. When you guys are driving your trucks and you're on the phone, what's the problem right there? Kevin, you know this.
Oh, there's, you know, all kinds of problems. The majority of your attention is devoted to something other than that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You've got other things going on. But also what's happening is this. Cool noise. You know, they've got those fancy-dancy headsets that kind of cut out the noise, but ultimately, you know, when you're talking to somebody else, you've got the cell service and you're having that noise, that background noise, the truck, the radio, everything that's going on creates noise. And so any of that physical noise that happens prevents us from effectively communicating, but also there's something called internal noise. And that's exactly what we're talking about when we wrap up our message and unwrap our message, that internal noise. All that stuff that's going on in our head, the day we've had, the bad day we've had, the good day we've had, all those things that are going on in there are distracting us and not allowing us to communicate effectively. So we've got these noises that come into play. But we've also got a lot of other bumps along the way. And some of them, you know, one of the biggest ones that I run into, well, let me put it this way. One of my biggest weaknesses that I have is what I call exaggeration, right? When we're communicating, it's either exaggerate things or use what we call absolutes. Let me ask some of the guys. Yeah, I'm sure you've been accused of this, Kevin, or maybe even a lot of the listeners out there. When you use an absolute, you never do this for me.
Never and always.
Always. Kevin, you never take out the trash. I always have to take it out. Is that true? Wasn't there a time like 6 months ago when you did take the trash out?
And even if it
right?
was 6 years ago, I mean, it still
right.
makes your absolute untrue.
Absolutely, using an absolute, right? It really is. And so what we do is we oftentimes use these absolutes. And what happens, Kevin, when I look at you and say, Kevin, you never listen to me? How do you think that puts your mood at that point?
Well, what happens with me is I forget everything else, and all that comes to my mind is defending the fact that that was wrong.
Absolutely.
Kevin,
I took out the trash 6 years ago. I took it out, and it was a good day. It was sunny. Don't you remember? No, because I wrote a note, and I put it on the refrigerator. You're welcome for me taking out the trash. That's what happens.
Right. Yeah.
Everything forgets forgotten. And so we have these absolutes, and we use them often. And so that when we use those absolutes, it puts people on the defensive. So if we could be talking about a broker. If we talk to a broker and say, you know what, this lane never pays that much. This is always like this. You guys are always trying to take advantage of me. Well, guess what they're going to do? Forget everything.
Get defensive and just, you know, dig in and defend their position that you're wrong.
Absolutely. There's a guy, a friend of mine on Facebook. He hasn't been to the CMC. He's a friend of a friend, but he's a driver. Won't mention his name, but he's a driver, and he gets on Facebook and gets some rants out all the time. And he had a rant about brokers, and he went on and said how this broker told him this, and then he quoted himself and what he told this broker. And I listened to it, and it was full of absolutes. You never do this. You always take advantage of me. You're always trying to do this, and you're always trying to screw me over. And how dare you do this? I will never work for you again. And I read it, and I just cringed every word I read, because all that the person was hearing was never, always, and at that point, their mind was spinning and wrapping around how I'm going to defend myself, or just simply, I'm just going to hang up on the guy. They're not thinking about anything. There's no benefit for that person to carry on a conversation with you, and they're going to get stuck in that defensive posture.
I think we might have a call on the line where it would be a fitting question for that point right there. Are you ready to take a question?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, let's do that. We're going to head off to Texas for this question. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you? Hello, George.
Hey, Scott. How are you?
Not real great. In the last few weeks, I've had 4 loads crater. Mm-hmm. I've had 3 customers cut off the load and say cancel at the last minute within 12 hours after I've driven all the way there, put out the money for the fuel, put out the money for my food. Happened to be cold the nights that I was at these places, so I had to idle for heat. Then call me and say, well, the loads are not going to go. And I said, well, what about truck ordered but not used pay? Well, we're not going to do that. The 4th load I got there, they told me the broker told me it was a no-tarp load. When I got to the customer, he says, well, we want the load tarped. I said, well, number one, are you willing to pay? He said, no.
Mm-hmm.
I said, that's strike one. I said, number two, this thing is not crated. You've got 1x6s framed around the thing. There's no way in God's green earth for me to climb up on it safely without getting hurt. And I told him, I said, you're going to have, I'd like truck order not pay. Well, I called the broker back, happened to be Landstar, and we've got no cooperation or no communication out of these people. They think my time is worth nothing.
Mm-hmm. So,
they don't,
what? Scott, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So we got a situation where, you're not getting what you expected, and now there's no communication. When you say no communication from them, what's happening? They're not responding to you? They're not answering your calls?
They're not responding, or it's, I'm looking into it. Well, you don't look into something for 2.5 weeks. I mean, within a day, you ought to know. And my opinion of it is I think the agents probably filed for the money, tell me I'm not going to get it, and they've kept it for themselves.
Okay. So here's what I'm hearing. Go ahead.
I assume, until I'm proven otherwise, that these people are crooked liars. And when they won't step up and do the right thing, then I know then they are confirming my suspicions.
Okay. So and I can certainly understand where you're coming from that. You've got some suspicions. There's some things happening that, you're told one thing and then at the last minute canceled. It's frustrating. And I can sense it in your voice. And, one of the things that, Kevin knows this about me, is I'm very blunt, and I speak what I hear, and I speak what I see, and I don't generally hold back. But I'm very nice about it. So Scott, let me tell you what I hear a little bit here. I hear a lot of frustration in your voice. And when there's frustration in our voice, and when we communicate, when we're frustrated, it breeds frustration, and people can feel that from us. Have you ever talked to anybody, Scott, where when they're laughing and they're giggling and they talk to you and you're laughing and giggling back? Have you ever had that happen before?
From time to time it does.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes that attitude is infectious. And so what I sense is a lot of frustration in your voice. And when you get on a phone loaded for bear of frustration, what happens is they feel that frustration, and frustration breeds more frustration. So I'm not saying it's all your fault, but what I'm saying is we've got to make sure on our end that we eliminate that frustration and go in with a clean slate, not with assumptions, because those assumptions, when we make those assumptions, they have a tendency to direct and dictate the way we take the conversation. So let me give you a quick example of this. I had a very similar situation happen to me when I was out speaking to an organization in Canada. Now, Canada does things a little bit differently, and I figured that they did things a little differently, so I went and did a presentation for them. Well, they didn't pay me the day of the presentation, which is in my contract. So I was a little frustrated with them. And so when I got back home, I called them on the phone, and I said, hey, listen, we're supposed to be paid on the day of my presentation. You know, I need to find my check. Well, that was a voicemail. And another voicemail happened, another voicemail. And finally, I got someone on the phone. By that time, I'd made four calls, four messages, highly frustrated. So I kind of let into her a little bit because frustration breeds frustration. She responded in frustration. And guess what happened, Scott? Nothing happened. We were at a standstill. And so that particular situation was completely my fault. I had to take a step back. Even though I do this for a living, even though I teach this for a living, I get caught in that trap. So what I recommend you do in a situation like this, take a step back from it. And what I want you to do is investigate what's going on, look at what's going on, see the situation for what it is. You're not getting paid for something that you need to get paid for. This is a business transaction. In order to do that, I've got to show them where I've spent my time, my money, my energy, that I've done that, and I need to express that to them. And then I need to express my desires, and I need to have them in my head clearly and specifically what I need and what I want to happen. And then here's the hard part, Scott. You've got to get on the phone, and you've got to calmly speak with these people and be careful about the words you choose to use. While they're only 10% of the believability of our message, they're a big part of how you can really turn a communication, you know, kind of take a nosedive in that. So, I encourage you to take a step back, piece by piece, take the frustration out of it and look at it now as a business deal, because it sounds like you've taken it kind of personally. So I don't want you to take it personally. The moment you take it personally, that just turns all bad. So look at it as a business transaction.
Well, what this has done to us is seriously dinged our finances for the month. And like I tell people, I was a 14-year recon Marine. I start out very nice, very, very friendly. But if you don't want to step up and do the right thing, I try to run my business with honor and integrity. I had a load that I was offered that was 3 inches over height yesterday, and I wouldn't take it because I didn't want a chance on getting caught and sneaking something illegal. And I tell them, you know, if you want to do this, you're going to incur the wrath of the gunny, and it ain't pretty.
Right. Well, you know, I got a Marine Corps back in 98, so... I know where you're coming from, Scott. I know where you're coming from. That's how I get into it, too. Here's what we're going to have to do, Marine to Marine, brother to brother. You've got to dial that back a little bit, because the way we are normally to the civilian population is a little bit harsh. What I mean by harsh is we can be a little bit too blunt for folks. So Take that, you know, that gunny and dial it back a little bit to maybe a Lance Corporal where you're talking to somebody who outranks you. Does that make sense, Scott?
Yeah.
And I know it put a ding in your finances, and that's hard, and that's rough. And in the same breath, that's going to hurt you. It's going to hurt you personally, but you've got to keep a business in order to keep that frustration, that anger, and a little bit of, you know, there's a little bit of hurt there, too, to keep that from coming into the conversation, because those things are massive roadblocks to effective communication. So,
well, my wife feels guilty in it, because these were all loads. She's taken over the biggest part of hunting my loads, negotiating rates and everything, and she took it very personally, and she was really upset because she feels she let me down. And I told her, I says, you didn't do anything wrong. I says, people with no integrity are the ones that did wrong.
Absolutely. Now, here's what I want you
George,
to do.
George, can I jump in here real quick?
Absolutely.
One of the things I heard Scott say was that he starts off nice, but if things go south, that changes quickly. And from my experience in business, you mentioned this, you've got to keep that anger, that emotion out of your voice when things start to go wrong. And at some point, if you really think these people are unethical, well, then there's no point in even being nice anymore, but there's also no point in trying to work with them. So you really have to start and nice isn't the right word, not for me anyway. You have to start with good communication skills, and you have to stay with good communication skills, because if the relationship is so bad that you fall into that emotion, well, it's just not going to work anyway.
You know, and Kevin, one more thing about that, too. And the one more thing about that, Scott, is this. For every challenge that comes up, that's an opportunity for us to overcome that challenge and create a stronger relationship, right? I mean, you when something comes up, before you jump down somebody's throat like you're used to, you're not used to it, we need to make sure that we keep an even keel, deal with them effectively and professionally, because with every challenge gives us an opportunity to overcome it and then be able to get to the end result. So that's what I'm gonna encourage you to do, is really take that step back and really remain professional and calm throughout the entire conversation. Like Kevin said, if you get to a point where you've been professional the entire time and they've just been unethical about their dealings, then it's time to cut them off and you know, move on.
Well, we're not going to haul for them anymore, and it's nothing with me. I'll be honest with you. It's not personal, but I get real irritated when it comes to money, because I've laid out money for fuel.
Yes, sir.
Two of the times we had rather long deadheads.
And that's and right there, and I can, Scott, I can stop you right there, because that's it right there. You said the key word, and the key word is I get frustrated really quickly when it comes to money. And that right there, my friend, will be the killer of your communication when that frustration comes up, when there's, especially when you have expensive deadhead, when you've got fuel, all that expensive comes in. That's going to trip you up every time. So what you're going to have to work on is when things come to money, not getting so frustrated and personal about it and really looking at it as a business and money to deal with it effectively that way. And you're going to have to do that, or you're going to get yourself tripped up every time. You know, money doesn't change hands the way you think it should or assume that it will.
Scott.
Yes.
You know we're here trying to help you, right? That's why we do these things.
Yeah.
Okay, so from just sitting back and listening, within literally 10 seconds of the start of you communicating, the only feeling I was getting was anger. And mm-hmm. I know the anger isn't at me, but the anger was so strong, the anger and frustration in your voice was so strong, it's a challenge for me to communicate. And I'm paying attention and I know how to, but you really have to be aware of that, that even now, days after this event, talking to somebody who really had nothing to do with it, that anger is still there. And that anger is a huge roadblock to communicating with anybody.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So, Scott,
and it's not to say
that
the anger might not be justified. It might
absolutely.
Be. But even when it is, it doesn't further your agenda at all. In fact, it really hurts it bad.
I like to look at communication. I always base my communication on communication with my wife, right? If I were to treat my wife that way, how would she react to me, right? And if I were to get angry with my wife in the very first, 20 seconds of a conversation, even a minute or two in the conversation, how's she going to react? Same way. And if that's going to happen in my mind, I stop it right there and I have to really readjust. The communication is a lot like flying. You know, I have a friend of mine who's a pilot, and if he's even one degree off when flying to Hawaii from L.A., he'll miss Hawaii completely. Constantly has to readjust, make sure he's on track, make sure they're still heading in the right direction to make sure they get their final destination. So you've got to do that. Find a way as you're going through. Take a step back. If you find yourself getting frustrated, Scott, just simply say, hey, you know what? I think I'm getting a little worked up here. I apologize. I tell you what, can I call you back in an hour? Can I call you back later? Or can I just take a breather real quick? Can we start this conversation over? There's absolutely nothing wrong with doing that. It doesn't show weakness. It shows true integrity and the desire to have a conversation. So I appreciate this, the call, Scott, and I wish you luck.
Thanks for the call, Scott. One quick comment, George, and then we're going to jump mm-hmm. to some more questions because we have some people waiting. When I first really started studying communication, trying to learn new skills, mm-hmm. and part of it was for the radio show, I wanted to be able to listen better, and I realized that I was missing all those visual cues that when you're face-to-face with somebody, so I knew I needed to step up my game. And at that same time, I I not long after that, I stopped talking on the cell phone while I was driving. And people give me a hard time now. I absolutely won't do it. I don't talk and drive on my cell phone ever. If their call is that important, I'll find a place to park and make the call. But normally it can wait until I get somewhere where I'm not driving. And I realized what happened was I was using the skills or trying to use the skills so hard and listening intently on a phone conversation to pick up all those cues, tone, pace, all those other things, that I'm not a safe driver. I'm so focal on that communication that I put almost no attention to my driving. Now, luckily, I never ran into anybody during this time, but what I would do, I would totally miss turns. I would be 15 minutes into a conversation and look around and not know where I was.
You know, multitasking is a huge myth. Women do it better than men, but even then, it's horrible. Multitasking is not something we can truly do effectively. One thing or the other will suffer, and when we try to do something else and communicate, how many of you have ever typed on your phone a text message and tried to talk to somebody? It just doesn't work. Driving and talking, it's difficult. So if you've got an important conversation with a situation with Scott, if that's an important conversation, if he's driving while he's having the conversation, that's not a good thing at all.
Absolutely. You ready for some more calls?
Absolutely.
All right. Let's head off to L.A. Dale Howard, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. George, thank you very much for taking my call.
Well, thanks for being here.
I've got a situation. I am pig in the middle with a company driver and our terminal manager. They're having a domestic, and it has escalated to the point now where our company driver is threatening to just abandon the truck and fly home, and communication has ceased, and it's now just little snippy messages over the satellite. And now I've been called in to be the marriage counselor and fix this. What can I do to get the conversation rolling again without one side blinking or feeling that they've blinked?
So marriage counselor, you said it was Dale?
Yes.
Dale the cop, Dale?
That's me.
Oh, I know you.
Ideally, I would take both of them, knock their foreheads together, and tell them to suck it up and grow up. But
that's about what I was about ready to tell you. I know you, Dale. You're a big guy. Just you know, beat them over the head and say, you know, put on your big girl pants and listen up.
Yeah, one of them is on the road and one of them's in the office, and I'm praying not to have the one on the road climb on an airplane and abandon a truck.
Right. Now you said marriage counselor. Now, I want to make sure I'm clear here. It's not a husband and wife. It's just using that as a metaphor.
Driver and management.
Okay. You're just using that as an example. Okay. Well, you know, that's a challenge when you're stuck in the middle of, you know, different people or you need to be stuck in the middle of two different people. So when you deal with that, what's happening is, and Dale, I'm sure you've probably had this before, when you're listening to one person talk to the other person and them responding, it's kind of like what Kevin said earlier. Seems like they're listening to two different radio stations or they're talking different languages.
Yeah.
Does that sound about right?
Well, you know, and they've each got valid points, but it's just deteriorated to the point where, you know, they're just not even civil anymore. And that something has to give.
You know, generally what happens in that situation, and generally the precursor, what happened before this, is when one person talks, the other person is formulating what they want to say while the other person is talking. And so then that person is done talking, and then so the other party begins to go off in a total different direction. And none of the ideas are shared, nothing gets accomplished, and nothing gets communicated, and then the other party feels like they're not being listened to. And so this usually creates a lot of animosity in the conversation, and before you know it, communications break down, and then it just becomes uncivil. They become snippy, they become little quirky messages, and it sounds like that's where you're at, is they've gotten now where they're just uncivil, and they send messages that are just kind of nasty to each other.
I get the feeling Yeah, and I kind of get the feeling that, you know, they both realize that, you know, they're wrong, but neither one of them wants to blink.
Well, it's now we're dug in, right? If I've been going around teaching that the sky is green, if I've been teaching that for a year, year and a half, 2 years, and then finally I learned that, wow, the sky is blue, sometimes you're just so dug into your position that you just don't move. And so this is what's happening with these two, is they've dug into their position so deeply that they might know they're wrong or even think they're wrong. They might even they know they're wrong, but they just won't give in, whether it be pride or whatever. But they've dug into their position so deeply that they won't move. So here's what you can do to help bridge that gap and help them go back and forth. And so what it will entail is it will entail a strong leader, which is you. You can do this. But it will be an opportunity for you to play a coach, not a babysitter, not a marital counselor, but more of a coach. So you're going to ask Party A. So Party A, explain what's on your mind. Tell me what's going on. Then talk to Party B, and Party B cannot talk during that time. Don't allow them to. And when Party A is done, Party B can speak their piece. Okay. And then what you're going to do is you're going to have each of the parties describe what the other person was saying. And it's best to do this all at once. So let's say we have Party A. Tell me what's on your mind. Okay, Party B, tell me what Party A just said. It sounds almost preschool, but when you're in that situation, you've got to sometimes just direct the flow. So what did they just say? And have Party B, in their own words, describe what they just heard. If they're right, Party A will shake their head. If they're wrong, Party A will fix it. But you see what's happening is chances are they're not hearing the other party and understanding what they're really trying to say. So flesh it out. If they're wrong, no, that's not what I was saying. Well, help them understand. What were you saying? Describe it again in another way. Have them describe it again. Maybe even you can help them and get it out where Party B then gets it and understands it. Then, okay, we've done that, Party A. Now it's your turn to listen to Party B. Party B, and again, use their names. You know, Party B, describe to us what's your situation. What's on your mind? What did you hear, Party A? And go back and forth like that until you get an understanding, until both parties have an understanding of what's going on. 9 times out of 10, that will solve the problem, right?
But it okay, and then I get to knock their foreheads together?
Well, knocking the foreheads only comes together after the feeling part, right? Because if that doesn't work, if they're still having a little bit of a problem, they're saying, yeah, I understand where you're coming from, I always go with the feeling part. All right, so, and it sounds kind of cheesy, and it sounds like Dr. Phil-ish, but it is. So tell me, when they don't understand what you're saying, what's going through your mind? How you feel about that, right? And let them describe it a little bit. And we're guys, or if it's a guy, you go, it bothers me, it pisses me off. Okay, when you say it pisses you off, how does it piss you off? Well, it just makes me feel like you don't care about me. There's the heart of the issue, right? You feel like he doesn't care or whatever it may be. Now, Party B, do you care about him? Absolutely, I think he's a great guy. Okay, so you solve those problems. And that's what it's all about. You know, is really letting each party describe themselves and having the other party making sure they truly understand it, and the other party checks the box and says, yes, they do understand me. That generally fixes it. I always like to go for the heartstrings after that and say, you know, what does it make you feel when this person doesn't listen to that aspect of you? And then get that. And then if that doesn't work, then you know, you might have to bring in a professional. Or, you know, you might have to think about, you know, getting a different combination, moving somebody to a different place, or maybe getting a new dispatcher, or maybe the driver is just not, you know, cut out for this type of the work that you offer.
Yeah, I think, you know, they're both good guys, and you're right. I think they've just dug in their heels, and yeah,
absolutely.
I'll give that a shot, and I guess that allows them to blink, maybe blinking.
Right.
Because I think that's where we're at now, is neither side will give a fraction of an inch.
Well, once you really understand the other person, it's very human nature in general is very difficult. Once I fully understand you, Dale, and you fully understand me, it's very difficult at that point to be a jerk and say, well, I'm still not going to. Once I understand, I was like, oh, well, that's why you need to do that. Well, I can see that, and I guess I don't have to do this, you know, if that's why you do. It's really all about understanding, and if you don't have that basic understanding, it really doesn't go anywhere. So that's what I would encourage you to do, is really get to the heart of understanding, Dale.
Perfect. Thank you very much, George. Look forward
to
seeing you in May.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon, Dale.
All right. Thanks for the call, Dale. George, I'd like to just throw in one more thing there again because,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the business we're in, it's logistics a lot of times. We're always doing this stuff on the phone, and
mm-hmm.
and many times that's just necessary. But I've also found that sometimes if that relationship is important enough, maybe it's a broker that I've been dealing with and things start to go south and we're not communicating. But this is an important relationship. I want to make it work. Or in this case here, sometimes it makes sense to step back and say, even if it's not convenient, I need to get face-to-face with this person. If it's
Absolutely.
Worth it, then I've got to take the time because communication is much better in person.
But, you know, going back to that statistic really quickly, that 60-30-10, when you're on the phone, there is no visual. 93% of your communication now becomes the tone and the way you say it, and 7% is the word you actually say. So you're at a huge disadvantage. You now have to become super animated and really explain yourself and help them understand it without sounding frustrated, you've really got to really push it. And so it's much easier to sell it the believability face-to-face because you're not relying on one specific channel so much. You're evening it out a little bit more.
Got it. Hey, we've got another call. Let's bring on Jim from Wisconsin. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Jim.
I've been listening to the conversation with very, very interested. I feel it's more personal communication. So I got a real twist for you guys here.
Sure.
This is industry communication. I feel that our industry is lacking communication to the general public by not presenting itself as professionals. And the problem that we're facing from this is we don't have anybody interested in wanting to be drivers anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a twist, isn't it?
you know, it is a little bit of a twist, but, you know, every industry, or a lot of industries have that spokesperson that goes out and, you know, a group that helps the image of, you know, recently I saw the Idaho Potato commercials where they got this big Idaho Potato truck and they're talking about it, and all that is really is just a PR campaign to really give a lot of positive attention towards Idaho Potatoes, you know. You know, in the industry, in the trucking industry, do you have that voice that comes out and spreads goodwill and good cheer to the masses? I haven't seen it, Kevin. Have you run into that?
Yeah, I've actually been involved. There are a couple programs, and unless you're either actively involved in the industry or you come in contact with one of these programs, you'd never know. The ATA, and there are a lot of drivers who don't agree with the ATA, but the ATA has been doing their road team program for years now. And some of the states have picked up. The ATA does a federal road team, a national road team. Some of the states have done road teams, and I was on one of them. I was on the Florida road team and was nominated for the national road team. And that's exactly what they do. It's a PR group. They take drivers who usually you have to have a good driving record, a fairly long history, and there are competitions, and you have to go and speak and present. And if you make it to the team, then the whole point is the road team schedules you to go out to groups outside of the industry. So I might go talk to Lions Group or anybody that would listen to us. And that was our job, was to go out and kind of spread the good word. But and then we have the Trucker Buddy, where drivers go into schools, elementary schools, and there's some cool things going on there. Jim, I'll tell you one of the biggest challenges, and we have lots of challenges in the industry trying to attract people in. Part of it is just image. The biggest realistic challenge we face is that you can't become a truck driver technically till you're 21. You can't drive interstate till you're 21. And most insurance companies really won't take you till you're 23. By the time people are 23, they're 5 years into a career, and they usually don't quit.
Oh, no, Kevin, I understand that completely, and I have nothing against the road team. I think that's a great idea. It may be a little outdated and old-fashioned only because, and I have all the respect in the world for the road teams that the states have, but if you're addressing 16- and 17-year-old kids at that time already, which that's their normal market, those guys are worried about who's going to buy the beer and who's going to get laid tonight. They're not really worried about the trucking industry. And at that time, they've probably got a tarnished record already, and they don't understand the responsibility of having a good record getting into this industry. So against the road team at all. I mean, I think it's great.
Even do a lot of schools. We did any kind of groups. What do you think the answer is? What should we be doing?
I got the answer. And I've been promoting it, and it's just like, man, I'm just hitting my head up against the wall. And I do driver training, and I have a safety company, but I started a nonprofit about 2 years ago, and the intent was to promote careers in the transportation industry. Well, you can't even believe it until you see these people. I go to middle schools and high schools, and I use the same commercial driving simulator that I train over-the-road drivers with, and I expose these kids to these careers to drive an actual truck and feel that weight. And when we interview these students, and we get as many as 150 students in a day that go to this, they beg us to come back. We can explain to them distracted driving, why people tell you distracted driving is unsafe, but when we'll do it to them when they're driving in front of some of their friends and stuff, and they go in a ditch and tip over or something, it's kind of reality, and it's like, oh, that's why. But when we interview middle school kids and high school kids, they don't even have a clue if you're not related or had friends or family in the trucking industry that there's a career out there. It's just unbelievable.
Well, and it sounds like you're taking a step to really, push the positive image of trucking. And ultimately, it's up to all the listeners out here as well. How do you get a bad image? Well, it's by your behaviors. How do you get a good image? You change your behaviors. So, how do we communicate a good image? It's less by word and more by action. So, you and everybody, and you're taking a great step, and you and everybody else just needs to change the way, we do things, change the way things are done in the industry, and it starts one person at a time. You're always going to have the bad eggs and the bad apples that get all the attention, but in order to communicate that message, it's got to be that style of change that you're looking for, that shift of change you're looking for, has to be done much more by action and less by word. So by you going out to schools and showing and being involved, that helps, spread the good word. But also just in what you do every day, the way you drive, the way you drive on the road, the way you dress, the way, here's one thing that happened one time that to my wife. She was at a Love's gas station, and she was coming out of the gas station. She went to get gas, and she went inside, and some guy started hassling her. It looked like a vagrant was hassling her. Well, a guy come up, obviously a truck driver because he came from the other side, stopped the guy, said, "Hey, leave the woman alone." She said, "Leave her alone." And the guy kind of got a little, feisty. He pushed her. He kind of got in the way between her and my wife and said, "Go away," and he finally went away. Oh, I said, "Thank you, I appreciate it." She bought him a cup of coffee and was really grateful. And he didn't want to take the coffee, but she said, "I want to buy a cup of coffee. Thanks for your help." And that truly changed her image or in her mind of the truck driving industry as a whole. So ultimately, what you're talking about, a huge shift in communicating the industry as a whole, is going to really boil down to what it is that individuals do, and it'll be judged as a whole.
Yeah, great point. And that's one of the reasons we do these things, Bijul, and what we're teaching here is each individual how to communicate better. You just made another point that we haven't really talked about yet, and that is one of the very first things that gets communicated before anything is said is just our appearance. Our appearance mm-hmm. can get in the way of our communication.
You know, that's 50% visual. You know, we could go into this all night long. There was a quick example. There was a meeting of judges, and this guy walks in a long ponytail. He's got cut-off shorts. He's got a big beach bag and a Hawaiian shirt that's opened up, and, you know, he's got his chest hanging out. He walks in, goes up to the front of this meeting of all these judges, and all these judges blow him off. And then he goes behind the screen, puts on his robe, comes out, and he's the leader of this organization who's been elected by his peers to lead this organization of judges. And his whole point of this conversation is look beyond what you see. But most people don't. Most people don't. So we've got to immediately make sure that our appearance and everything is what we want to convey. The message we're trying to communicate comes from before people even open their mouth or you open your mouth, is what they see.
Absolutely. Well, George, it's hard to believe, but we blew right through that hour. Like you said, there's so much more that could be covered about this topic, and it's such an important topic that I'm going to have you back and continue this on as a theme.
Well, that would be great, Kevin. I appreciate it, guys. Thanks to everybody, Steve and Dale and Jim, for calling in. And you know, ultimately, I'll leave you with one last word. It's really simple. Think before you speak, and we'll get into more later.
Excellent. Great advice. George, we will get you back, and we'll do this more. Thanks, everybody else, for joining us tonight. And we will – the plan is to continue this time slot. Now, we're working out a lot of details on this podcast series. The idea is to use this time slot here for, 7 p.m. Eastern time on Thursdays, to kind of try out new ideas, new shows, and new hosts even. So our goal would be to develop new shows, spin them off to a different hour, and then keep working on new ideas. We'd ultimately like to develop multiple hours every week of different shows, all focused around trucking and owner-operators and business. So I can certainly see that George's role here is going to expand and grow, because that is great information and a lot of stuff we could talk about. So mark it on your calendars. We'll send out emails and text messages next week, and we're going to continue to grow this this series and try to build new programming. Thanks, everybody, and we will see you tonight for the live show.